we go.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on 93 on the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Wow. Is it raining over there?
Pretty fast. Let me check.
No.
No. Oh, okay.
Nope. Is it raining over where you're at?
No, it isn't.
Oh. I guess when we go on air, we can tell the people that it's not raining in our part of the... Oh, we're on now. Okay, good.
Yes. So...
Oops. Sorry. Yep. Okay. The show has begun.
The show has begun. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
There we go. And here's Ron.
Yeah, I mean everyone too. Mike and I were just talking about the number of listeners. It's really up there. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We do appreciate it, and not for anything, just except for the fact that we're really excited because of the number of listeners. We start South Carolina tonight. And then we have a guest, but first, as always, whenever we start a new state, we talk a little bit about the state, I tell you a little bit about what's going on with the state, and a little bit where it's located and all that, so let me jump right into that. South Carolina, it's located in southeastern United States. It's got the state of North Carolina to the north of it. And the state of Georgia to actually the west and south, with the Atlantic Ocean to the east. Originally, it was the province of Carolina, and the province of South Carolina was the first of the 13 colonies that declared independence during the American Revolution. Yay! The colony was also originally named by King Charles II of England in honor of his father, Charles I, which... I was confused when I read that, but Carolus is Latin for Charles, so Carolus or Carolina, so that's where it came from. South Carolina was the first state to ratify the Articles of the Confederation and the eighth state to ratify the Constitution. It later became the first state to secede from the Union in December 20th, 1816, and was readmitted to the United States on June the 25th, 1868. It is the 40th most extensive state, 24th extensive as in square miles, and the 24th most populous state of the 50. Its capital and largest city is Columbia. So Columbia is located just almost right smack dab in the middle of the state. It's just really just right there in the middle. Quite a few lakes. The biggest one is Lake Marion at 110,000 acres, but they do have 11 or 12 lakes from that down to 7,500 acres, which is quite a few. They are hit by earthquakes, usually around the coast. No snow, not usually to the state. There is snow up in the northern part of the state every once in a while, but the mean temperature doesn't really get that cold. Hurricanes and tropical storms or cyclones, whatever you want to call them, wherever you live, is a problem there. They do get hit quite often. They're just like a target sometimes. State was very involved in the Civil War because of its location. Women's suffrage, they initially rejected it, the 19th Amendment, but then later ratified it and got part of the women to vote. It is the largest city is Columbia, with Charleston being the second largest and North Charleston being the third. Mount Pleasant is the fourth largest state, and South Carolina, most of you might equate that with Mayberry and the Andy Griffith Show. That's where actually that show took place. Interstate 20, Interstate 26, 77, 85, 95, 126, 185, 385, 520, and 526 all run through the state, plus a whole bunch of U.S. routes, the most popular U.S. Route 1, which runs right along the coast. They have Interstate 73 and Interstate 74 that are being built, and that will be part of the state, if not already. It's in the progress. They may have some areas hooked up. Quite a few universities throughout the state, Furman University being the largest as far as endowments go. University of South Carolina, Clemson is there, the Citadel, and then other smaller public colleges and universities throughout the state. They are quite a few counties, 46 counties in the state. All the highways, basically, most of them meet right around Columbia, which is in the center of the capital, although they cut back and forth. The rivers and lakes all obviously run northwest to southeast into the ocean. The elevation of South Carolina is basically, you know, lowlands. The highest point is Sassafras Mountain, which is located on the far western point of the state, and that's 3,560 feet. And the lowest point, obviously, is sea level, right on the Atlantic Ocean. So they quite a bit of history behind South Carolina, and a great vacation spot. People are going to South Carolina all the time. It's a fantastic vacation spot, and it also is great for grapes. But the grapes they grow are not the vinifera, mostly scuppernong. So we'll be talking about those. Our guest tonight is the proprietor and his wife, Anita and Wayne, from Cityscape Winery. And they are going to be on. Not only is Wayne the proprietor of Cityscape, he is also the president of the South Carolina Grape Growers Association. So we'll be able to talk about the grapes that are growing there and anything else that he wants to bring up with us tonight. So we're looking forward to an interesting program. And I think Wayne is out there, or Anita, or one of the two is out there waiting for us to join the program. So we're going to bring him on.
The president of South Carolina Wine Growers Association.
Yeah, hello, Anita. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm on the air.
You're on the air. You're the one I'm talking to.
You dragged her out before I
dragged her out. Yeah, I saw her sitting there. I dragged her out.
Happy to talk to you, but my husband is actually president of the South Carolina Wine Growers Association, and I think you'd prefer to talk to him.
Well, I'd tell you, both of you would any time, either one. I don't care.
Okay. He's the winemaker. I'm the wine taster.
So you're the wine taster, and he's the maker.
Yeah, I'm the wine taster. I'm the one who tells him what to do. He just does it. So hold on for me 1 second. I'm going to get him for you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. I saw them on hold, and I thought she was ready, and I just popped her on out here.
And hello.
Hello. Now, you must be Wayne.
I am.
I'm Ron. I am, and this is Mike also sitting around here. We are the host of All About Wine, and that's what we're going to talk about, All About Wine from South Carolina.
Okay. Good deal.
First, let's start out. Tell us about Cityscape Winery. How did it start? When did it start? A little history of that.
Well, first of all, South Carolina only has about 8 wineries in total. So it's not a major player in the wine industry in the U.S., but we're growing. We're going to get there. Cityscape is in Greenville County. It's the... We're the first winery in Greenville County, and we would consider ourselves the premier winery.
Uh-huh.
We do about 10,000 bottles a year.
Wow.
So it's a small-scale winery, a small batch, but we are growing, fortunately. This has been good to us. And it's a start out as a hobby of mine. I started making beer up in Canada in the 80s, and then as I got a little older, my taste migrated somewhat from beer to wine, and we decided that we were in Chattanooga. We joined a winemaking club, and it was some serious amateurs. In fact, they made champagne the traditional way. These were guys were hardcore. And... when we moved to Greenville, and I retired, or we retired, I should say, we decided that we needed to have a business. And so the logical thing was to take our hobby and turn it into a small business. And we started out, we bought the assets of a supply place that sold winemaking supplies. And we applied for our license and started the winery 4 years ago.
Wow. So,
and like I said, today, this year, we should be somewhere around the 10,000 bottle mark.
So you've only been in business 4 years. That's cool. You said Canada. Are you originally Canadians?
No. I'm U.S., born in Kentucky, but I was an executive with the auto industry. I was a vice president of human resources for auto companies. And... So if you in the auto industry, you've got to pay homage to Mecca, and you will spend your time in Detroit. And I did.
That's true.
We were 15 miles. At that point, it was not legal to make alcohol in the U.S. without a license.
Uh-huh.
And thanks to Jimmy Carter's administration, they changed that. And at that point, like I said, it was not legal. So we had a boys' night out every other Wednesday, I think it was. We'd go across the river. We live 18 miles from the border, so we just drive across the river into Windsor, Ontario,
mm-hmm.
and we go to a little brew shop, and we made our beer. And that was how we got started. So it was boys' night out.
And the rest, as you say, is history. Yes.
The rest is history. So as our kids say, it's our hobby gone stupid.
Yeah, that's what happens to a lot of people, I'm afraid. South Carolina grapes, I'm going to bring in part of you as a president of the Grape Growers Association along with Cityscape Winery here, but South Carolina grapes, what are you growing? What can be grown there? What is available? What can you do?
Well, South Carolina is very much like Florida or Alabama or Mississippi, the southern states, and to some extent Georgia and North Carolina. We are really relegated for the most part to muscadine varieties. Muscadine is a native grape, it's indigenous to the area, and it can tolerate both the climate and the soil conditions and the humidity. Muscadine is a bunch grape rather than a clump grape rather than a bunch grape, such as viniferas are. and so it's adapted to humidity. Most of South Carolina is below about 1,700 feet altitude, so Pierce's disease is a real concern on people who attempt to grow vinifera type grapes.
Right.
It's not. You can get away with it for a couple of years, but long term, you know, you're going to get hit by Pierce's disease. The only exception is about a 10 or 12, 15 mile strip that borders the North Carolina and North Georgia mountains, where the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it gets up to about 1,900 feet in altitude before you cross the border in North Carolina. That changes the game. There's a winery called Victoria Vineyards that's right up within a couple miles of the border, and they're able to grow some Chardonnays, some Merlots, and some Viognier, I know, and done it quite successfully.
Wow.
When you cross into North Carolina, it's different types of grapes totally. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I go right ahead. I'm sorry. I was gonna.
Muscadine is, as you probably know, has a very distinctive flavor. And everybody's grandfather made muscadine wine when they were a kid. It just was a rite of passage. And you either like it or you dislike it.
It's a love hate. That's what I tell everybody. Muscadine, well, there's no indifference. It's a love hate.
You're exactly right. There's no one that says, it's okay. Either turn their nose up or they say, wow, this is really good. It reminds me of when I was a kid. That's sort of the way it is with muscadine.
Yes, yes. And it seems like that's the way with everybody. It's very few people are indifferent about the muscadine. I've enjoyed some muscadine as well as the others. I'm one of those exceptions that I do like a muscadine every once in a while, but they tend to have that distinct taste, and you know right away it's a muscadine.
Yeah. It's like you said, love hate. You love it and you think it's great, or you just turn your nose up. It's one of the others' nose. There's no middle ground on this one.
Very seldom. Very seldom.
But, you know, a company like Duplin in North Carolina, they make a million bottles a year. That's what their capacity is. And, you know, they have made a fortune off of muscadine, but that's their niche.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we, you know, down here in Florida, we have a couple of wineries that have, you know, just people roll out the muscadine wines by the little wagon full, cases at a time. It's, you know.
Yeah.
But then there is those who walk in the door at the winery, at my winery, and they say, do you make muscadine? And I say, no. And they say, oh, good. And they walk on in. Or I have those that walk to the door and say, do you make muscadine? And I say, no. And they say, thank you, and turn around and walk out. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, really the way it is. What we speak muscadine, is Scuppernong's, Carlos, all those are just, I mean, basically the Rotundifolia, Vitis rotundifolia, or is it any other?
We use two varieties. I think there, if my memory serves me correctly, there are 28 varieties of muscadines.
I believe, yeah.
And, you know, most of people say, well, I have muscadines, I have scuppernongs. Well, scuppernong is a muscadine.
Right.
Like 28 varieties. We use in our wines a noble, which is the red or the black grapes, technically, and we use Carlos.
Uh-huh.
That's what we have in our vineyard. We purchase Carlos and Noble from other South Carolina vineyards. And this year we're buying about 4 tons of magnolias to try to add a little bit to our portfolio. Something a little different. But for the most part, Noble and Carlos are the workhorses.
Yeah, and those seem to be the ones, especially Carlos. Carlos is the one that's grows everywhere in the South. I mean, it's like I tell people that muscadine is like a weed. You can put it in the ground, just let it grow, and go back 5 years later and pick the grapes if the birds and deer don't beat you to it.
Well, that's the problem. We live, you know, out in the country. We have plenty of deer, and we're fighting the deer and the bees and the birds, and sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But
well, yeah, I can imagine. So you use the Noble and Carlos. Your vineyard, how big is it?
We have a half acre. And, you know, I think one misnomer that people have is that vineyards and wineries are one and the same.
Yeah, you're right.
A vineyard is a farm operation. I mean, it's purely and simply what it is. It's a farm operation, no different growing soybean or corn or whatever else you know you grow. It is a farm. And a winery is a manufacturing, it is a process orient. And farming is hard work. It's a lot harder than making wine.
Yes, it is.
And but people expect, when you go to a winery, they expect to see a vineyard.
Yes, they do.
So quite honestly, for us, it's as much aesthetics as it is the production value. We can purchase grapes or berries, if you will, cheaper than we can grow them ourselves.
Yeah.
By the time you fertilize and you pesticide and fungicide and you know all and irrigate, we can buy them cheaper than we can from people who know what they're doing, real farmers. So we originally started with the idea we would have a, you know, several acres of vineyard, but it did take us long to realize that, you know, you got to set your priorities and where's the value added, and for us, it is to winemaking as opposed to the vineyard.
And you know, and that's a point too. That's a very good point in the fact that people do expect. I get people coming in all the time. I don't have the vineyards right around the winery. People come in all the time and ask where the grapes are growing. And I think people just have this misconception to think that you have to have a vineyard around a winery. And
yeah.
You
and
know,
you know, I think it's a misconception. If you go to in California, so Napa or Sonoma or any of those areas, and you ride down these roads, you see just, you know, vineyards and vineyards and vineyards and wineries right after one after another, and they all sort of run together. And the appearance is that I have a winery and I grow my own grapes, but the reality is I have a winery, but I buy grapes from the guy down the road who produces them for, you know, 10 or 12 different wineries.
Right.
And
you know, and that happens a lot around this country too. There's a lot of growers who are not wineries, and you find it a lot of places because those are the ones that don't want to deal with that end of it, and they just would rather grow the grapes and do a good job of it. I mean, the ones who are growers, most growers do an excellent job of what they're doing.
I mean, but they know what they're doing. I mean, you got to figure what you're good at, and you focus on that, and that's, you know, and it's economy of scale, very much. We pick by hand here, but if you've got a 100-acre vineyard or 200-acre vineyard, then you have a machine that picks for you, and so you cut your costs down, and so the economies of scale come into play also on these things.
Right.
And, you know, if you go to your local wine store and you look at the bottles, if you know how to read a wine label, you'll see estate bottled.
Right.
Estate bottled means that the grapes were physically grown on the same property as the wine was produced. And generally, winemakers will get a premium for that. But very few are estate because they buy their grapes or they use other grapes to supplement their own production. And the other thing is certain areas can produce certain varieties of grapes much better than other areas.
Right.
So
yeah.
You can't be all things. So if you want to have a Chardonnay and a Pinot Noir and a Pinot Grigio and a Riesling and whatever else in your portfolio, chances are that, you know, that 20-acre hillside that you have cannot produce all those efficiently and well. They're just they need different climate, different conditions. So you buy grapes from somebody who has the area that's correct for it.
And you know, and a very good point too, because we haven't really talked about that so much on any of the programs. And we always talk to people, and we said you have a vineyard, and they said, yeah, I have you know an acre, 5 acres, 10 acres, and all that. But there's a lot of them out there who do rely on the growers all over, and the growers know what they're doing, and the growers can handle it, and they pass it on. I mean, it just it's really two different entities that work so well together. I mean, if you have your own vineyard, you basically have another crew or something that really takes care of that separately. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, for you as a winemaker to get out there, you might supervise it a little bit, but you're really not the one who's doing most of the stuff, unless it's, you know, just like a two-person operation or something like that. And then,
it's a,
you know,
it's
you might
a totally
have a little
different one. Skill set.
Right.
And so, for example, close to us, relatively close, is Biltmore House up in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Biltmore has the distinction of being the most visited winery in the United States. Not the
uh-huh.
biggest, and clearly not the best, but the most visited. And they have their vineyards on their property, and it looks very picturesque. But they purchase like 85% of their capacity from other people in the surrounding areas. Because
do they? I didn't know it was that high. Wow.
It's very high. And it's and a lot of the stuff that they have on their own property, they just don't produce themselves. So, I mean, in fact, we have some friends who have a 17-acre plot up in North Carolina where they grow in Sangiovese. And
mm-hmm.
they have a contract built more, and they... That's all they do. They grow the grapes and build more, takes them, and everybody's happy.
I didn't realize that was it was that high of an amount. That's substantial. I
it is.
Well.
But you can't be all things. So you choose and pick and choose what you do well, and you focus on that, and you rely on and partner with people who do other things well. So that's just the nature. It's not just restricted to the wine industry. It's automotive industry. It's publishing industry. It's everybody else. So
yeah, everybody.
Newspapers don't print their own. They don't make their own paper. They buy the paper from somebody who does it well. So.
And that's usually the way it works in most everything, too. You're absolutely right on that. What do after you pick them, get them in, what are you using? Stainless steel, oak? What are you aging your wine in?
We use poly tanks.
Do you?
We do. And
In fact, after I said stainless steel or oak, I left off the third one. That was the poly or the plastic, basically.
You know, I think one thing you have to recognize is your market. And with all due respects to South Carolinians, who's our primary market, they are not sophisticated wine drinkers for the most part. You know, wine is relatively, you know, new to the populace in South Carolina. You know, it's been a beer and, you know, other things, but wine is fairly new.
Is it? Really? Yeah, that's strange.
Well, it is. I mean, it's and they're not sophisticated. and I say that not in a disparaging way, any stretch of imagination, but young wines that are fruit forward and you can taste the grapes appeals to our customers much more than those that are oaked or that are really dry.
Oh, yeah, most everybody, though. It's not just your customers. We talk to people around the country, and I think the overall consensus is that people like a young, fruity wine with a little bit of sweetness. They don't like that oak.
Well, we have a good friend who is a sommelier for a chain of higher-end restaurants in the Greenville area.
Oh.
And, you know, Richard knows, he's forgotten more about wine than I'll ever know. You know, he's a sommelier and sort of has his PhD in wines. And one of his sayings is that Americans age their wine in the back seat of the car on the way home from the grocery store. And, you know, now I will say, first of all, in preface, Richard can be a little bit of a wine snob, and he's earned the right. But the point is well taken. When you get past, you know, you get past the initial, American taste is young wines. Now, if you're in California and you're accustomed to heavily oaked and, you know, it's more of a tradition out there, that's different. But for most of the U.S., people like young wines. They like to taste the fruit, and the more you age them and the more that you oak them, the less that the fruit comes through. And they just don't care for it as much.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
At least in this area, you know, when you oak wine and you put them in barrels and you let them sit for, you know, a year, whatever you want to, whatever, there's a price you pay for that.
Right.
And that price gets passed on to the consumer. And most of our, at least our customers, aren't willing to pay that extra $5 or $6 a bottle to say it was oak, aged in oak barrels for 12 months.
Right.
15 months. It just isn't the nature of our customer base. So
yeah,
we use poly. Most of our wines are 6 to 8 months old. They've been, you know, for maturation for that long, after they've, you know, we've stabilized, and you know, for the most part, I think our customers enjoy the quality. It's a good value. It's a good quality for the price. It's a good value.
I noticed on your website you say that you have 8 wines at any given time. What are those 8?
Well. One of the things that we recognized several when we first started out is that we've got to differentiate ourselves somewhat from the other guy. If you want a Merlot, then you can go to the local grocery store and you can have a choice of 35 Merlots, or if you want to go to the big Total Wines, you can have 300 Merlots to choose from. So we don't make a Merlot. We make a Blackberry Merlot.
Ah. Uh-huh.
We buy juice from a broker, since we can't grow it locally. We buy it in drums of 50 gallons at a time from a broker who buys it out of California in this case. We blend it. We make blackberry wine from local blackberries, and we blend it together to create a blackberry Merlot.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Riesling. We take a Riesling, and we blend it with whole pineapple juice, not concentrate, but whole pineapple juice. We make a pineapple Riesling.
That sounds good.
We make a dark chocolate red, which is a Merlot blended with a special dark chocolate. So we have different varieties other than things that you could just see get off the shelf at the local grocery store or the wine shop. It would be something that is unique to us.
And obviously that's a great way to do it, too, because you're offering something that's unique that you're not going to find in the grocery stores.
That's right. And in South Carolina, I'm not sure how it is in Florida. I don't recognize the rules as well as probably I should. But in Florida, a winery can only sell the wines that they make, and they can only sell it on premises. So if we want to sell retail, our shop, we can only sell the wines that we make, first of all. And if we want to distribute to wine shops or whatever, we have to go through a distributor.
Oh, you have to go through a distributor?
We do. And the stipulation is unless it's 60% South Carolina content. And about 5 of our wines meet South Carolina content provision. And so we could self-distribute if it has South Carolina content, 60%. If it has no South Carolina content, we can only sell retail or go through a distributor. And with the distributor, the way it works, at least in South Carolina, these guys are very proud of their services they offer, and they offer you about a 50% discount. So for a $12 bottle of wine that we sell at our shop, we could sell for $6 to a distributor who turns around, takes, you know, X amount of profit, and he turns and gets it to the retailer who takes X amount of profit. And all of a sudden, your profit margin go down.
That's right.
Yeah, it's more accessible to the general public, but once you mass produce, you know, just back up. I think part of the reason a person goes to a winery is the experience.
Yes.
Not necessarily the wine itself, but the experience. And so they're willing to pay a premium to sit and check the taste of wines, meet the winemakers, see the facilities, you know, kick the tires on the car, so to speak. And they're willing to pay more for that than they would for that same bottle of wine if they walked into the local grocery store and picked it off the shelf.
That's
so
true.
For the winemaker and for the winery, margins are much better if you sell it out of your shop. Plus,
true.
You give the person a much better experience.
That's very true. That's,
you know,
and
we like making wine. We enjoy making wine, but we enjoy making a little money also. And to work harder to make less money just doesn't make sense.
It's true. Well, you know, and that's, I think you nailed it right there in the fact that people like the experience of a winery. It's so popular. I have people come in all the time to the winery and say, everywhere we go, we try to stop in at the wineries, the local wineries. And this is what people do. They like the experience. They like walking into local wineries, like seeing what's there, what they have, what they're doing. And it's just something that people enjoy doing. And if you have something that's a little bit different that they can't pick up down at the local grocery store while they're out shopping, then that makes the experience that much more exciting. You know, like a pineapple Riesling or blackberry Merlot or something that gives them something that's unique, that is very, very South Carolina, very you.
Yep. And that's all part of the experience.
It is. It is. It's
and,
all,
you know,
part of that.
My wife has, who, you know, we sort of had to, we're co-owners, of course, and, you know, she sort of does the marketing, the tasting room, and the sales, and I do the more of the production. And she said it's a very chatty business.
Yes.
People come in, and they want to chat, and they want to talk about lots of things, and that all contributes to the experience. So when they walk away, you want them to, you know, obviously take a case of wine with them, but, you know, say, boy, that was fun. I enjoyed that. And I think that that's all part of why you go to a winery to buy wine versus going to the local grocery store or the wine store.
And that's very true. A couple of questions about your vineyard. You say you have like a half an acre. I know it's on your website you're looking at expanding. How old is this website, and are you expanding yet?
Well, the website, you know, one of the things that we do well is make wine. One of the things we don't do well is maintain the website.
That's like all of us. I know. I'm bad, too.
Oh, man. It's like Facebook. Everybody says, you got to be on Facebook. But, you know, we just can't seem to have time to do that kind of stuff. You know, it's our intent. It was originally our intent, like I think I said earlier, to have several acres, a few acres of vines. And, you know, the thought was we'd make our own production requirements. But as we have gotten more into it, it just doesn't seem to fit our business model.
Uh-huh.
To spend more money and time and infrastructure into the grapes themselves when we can purchase locally at a lesser price.
And that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's a financial decision. I mean, it'd be nice to be able to sit on the back porch or the winery and look over, you know, 5 acres of grapes. But that's 5 acres of work. For us, you know, it's just, we're not farmers.
I know what you mean.
It takes a lot of pruning. It takes a lot of fertilizer. It takes a lot of work. And
every month, every week, project. Yeah. What I was curious. I was trying to look up, and I never found one. Is South Carolina in any AVA?
There are none.
There are none in South Carolina. Okay, I didn't think there were. I looked, and I couldn't find any anywhere, so I didn't think there was.
Again, South Carolina, and I'll speak from the Wine Grower Association. Like you mentioned, I happen to be serving as the president this year.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina, let's back up. As we like to say, South Carolina is in the buckle of the Bible Belt. And it is one of these things where the laws have over the years have not been conducive to encouraging wineries or alcohol in general, but wineries in this situation. And they haven't been overtly negative to them. They just have had provisions that restricted. And as we sit here today, and we have worked with our local representatives, and there's Representative Bedingfield, who has been extremely supportive. Senator Verdin, who's our senator, has been Our senator for our group, our district, has been extremely supportive. Even though he's a teetotaler, he understands the business aspects of it. What's happened is that the laws have discouraged, and as South Carolina looks around and they say, North Carolina, our neighbors to the north, have, I think, 220, and I could be wrong, but about 220 wineries. Georgia, our neighbors to the west, has like 95. When you look to, you know, around, we are missing the boat. Wineries is an ecotourism or agritourism in other states.
Right.
People will travel to the Yadkin Valley in North Carolina for the weekend to visit 10 wineries on a Saturday or Sunday. People will travel to the North Georgia Mountains to visit 10 wineries, and they'll spend the night on Saturday night, and they'll buy eat at restaurants, and they'll buy gasoline, and they do stuff, and they go for that purpose only. South Carolina does not have that. And fortunately, we were able to persuade the legislature last year to recognize some of the shortcomings, and they passed a bill that we introduced, that we sponsored as the Wine Grower Association. I personally wrote the bill. I submitted the language to a representative who, with the help of the administrative staff, tweaked it to legalese. We testified in front of the agricultural subcommittee in order to push it there to help facilitate it through the legislature. And on February 22nd, Nikki Haley, our governor, signed the law. And one of the things it did, heretofore, it was South Carolina, the only way a winery could sell retail was if it had 51% South Carolina content.
All right.
Which meant every bottle of wine that was manufactured in South Carolina that you wanted to sell retail had to have at least 51% South Carolina content. It could be blueberries, peaches, blackberries, muscadines, or whatever. But there is a very, that really narrowed your market, because people who buy a Pinot Grigio do not want blackberries in a Pinot Grigio.
No,
that's the way it is. And, you know, you either, like we said earlier, you either like or you dislike muscadine.
Right.
And most wine people who enjoy wine and buy wine don't consider fruit wines to be true wine.
That's true.
It's only grapes. So if you say it's got blackberries in it, you got anything else?
Yeah.
So fortunately, the law changed, and it opened up the opportunity for us to buy juice from brokers that we can now sell retail. Now, it sounds insignificant, but it was a huge, it was an 800-pound gorilla that hung over everyone's, looked over everyone's shoulder.
So it doesn't have to be 51% anymore?
It does not. We can import 100% juice, and we buy through a broker. We buy Merlot, we buy Pinot Grigio, we buy Malbec, we buy Riesling, other types of different type grapes through a broker. They have to be out of New Jersey, but you know, just where his headquarters is. They buy from Argentina, Italy, British Columbia, Washington, California, wherever they repackage it, and for us, 50-gallon drums, and that's the way we buy it. And then we, of course, you know, process it into wine, and we can sell it retail without having this 51% restriction on us. And that has opened up the market for us in South Carolina.
For everything. Yeah, for everything.
No, it changed the game.
And that's going
to
get.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's going to get people, instead of saying, well, we don't want to go to South Carolina, all they have is muscadine, that will say, oh, they've got a variety of stuff now plus the muscadine. So that's a great, great thing there.
That was a huge success for us. We have our organization has a legislative agenda for the upcoming session of the South Carolina legislature. And one of the things we're hoping to accomplish is to obtain the ability to have off-site tasting rooms.
You don't? And that's
again,
not. Yeah.
Again, it doesn't sound like a big deal, and you know, your listeners may say, you know, what the hell does that make? Who cares? But you know, we're in Greenville County, and we live about our vineyard and our winery's got 15 miles outside the city of Greenville. Greenville is the economic engine of South Carolina.
Yeah.
And it's about 350,000 population in the upstate area. But with Michelin, BMW, and several other large employers, it's the economic engine. Right now, we can only sell our wine through a wholesaler, distributor at the winery. If you're able to have a tasting room like Georgia and North Carolina does, and I believe that Florida does also. I could
yes.
be mistaken, but I think they do.
Yes, we do.
We could rent, lease a 1,000 square feet of retail space in downtown Greenville, and at any point in time. There's 3,000 people downtown on Saturdays and Friday, Saturday, Sundays, eating and drinking and whatever. We could have a small retail tasting room. We could sell our wines, and that would be a huge advantage. But right now, we could only sell retail where it's made. To rent 10,000 square feet in downtown Greenville would be cost prohibitive. We couldn't do it.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we're hoping to do this upcoming session of the legislature.
Well, overall, then, I always like to ask this question about the government, state governments. Do you love them, hate them, want to hug them, want to kiss them, want to kill them? I mean, overall, what's your opinion of the government working with wineries in South Carolina?
The feds have been very cooperative. We deal with people, the TTB, which is the Treasury that handles the wineries. It's located in Cincinnati. And you call them and you ask a question, and they get back to you, and they are extremely helpful. I mean,
yes.
You couldn't ask for a better group of people to work with you. Now, the reporting is onerous, to say the least. I mean, they want to know how many pounds of sugar we purchased and how many pounds we spent, we used. Why do they care? But they do. But that being said, South Carolina, like I said, is not really sophisticated in that respect. And you call the South Carolina Department of Revenue, who regulates the call in South Carolina, and you say, I have a question. And they say, you really need to talk to a lawyer. We can't give advice.
A lawyer?
I'm not asking for advice. I'm just saying, can I do this? You really need to talk to a lawyer.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's unbelievable. You're right. So when you deal with the state government, the requirements, again, as long as you send your tax dollars in, they leave you alone. Excise tax, they leave you alone, but don't ask for any not advice, but just ask a question. And you pay $250 an hour to talk with an attorney to ask a question, and he will tell you, there's no precedent, so easier to beg forgiveness than to ask permission.
That's true. Yeah. So you just sort of jump right in with both feet and then hope you don't get much trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you want to stay in compliance, but when there's a question, you want to do the right thing. As a citizen and as a business owner and as a taxpayer, and you just want to do the right thing.
Right.
But sometimes you need a little help. And just tell me what the right thing is. Don't tell me to go see an attorney so he can tell me. And so that's frustrating. But overall, there's a lot worse place to live in South Carolina, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I have a question. Tell me about Bucky and Lucky and Baby and Bambi.
Oh. that's funny because you'd have to know a little bit of our personal history. Second marriage for both of us. Both of us have been professional people. I was a vice president in automotive industry for a fairly large automotive company in the Detroit area. My wife is was a property manager for different organizations that had, apartments, stuff like this, 300 or 400 unit apartments.
Wow.
So we got married. We had our family, my family, her family, we sort of merged. So we got four kids between us. And one's a professor, a mathematics PhD in mathematics in North Carolina. One is a works for Fox News, and she produces the Grid of Ancestry on Fox News.
Oh, really?
Yep, that's her boss. One is a cosmetics representative for a company, a French company, and one is a computer programmer for Wells Fargo, Charlotte. But each of these kids have seen us as going to work, professional, suit and tie, whatever, and especially in my case where I traveled extensively to my career. So all of a sudden, when we retired, we bought this piece of property of 10 acres out in the country and bought goats. And they thought we had lost our friggin' minds.
Goats? What are you going to do with goats?
Well, we know about goats. We don't know anything about goats except they're hungry. And we bought this overgrown piece of property with the idea of putting a vineyard and a winery out here. And Bucky, Lucky, Baby, and Bambi, all they cleared land for us. They absolutely stripped the vine, the bushes and the stuff, so we could bring some somebody come in with the equipment and clear it all out. And so the goats have been. It was funny because one of our grandkids, we were looking to buy a goat, another goat, and we bought one for each of the grandkids, and we went to look at it. The guy, he said, "Well, what type of goat are you looking for?" And the grandkid, who was like 6 years old at the time, said, "They really don't care as long as it's hungry." That was it.
And goats are, so hey.
That's right. And what's amazing is how much people enjoy coming out and petting and feeding these goats.
Oh, yes. Yes, I can imagine.
Again, we talked about earlier, it's all part of the experience. You know, people live in the city. You know, they come out and, it's more land they've ever, they've ever imagined. You know, they have a quarter acre and a subdivision. Here is, all this undeveloped land. And you got goats. They can pet the goats. They can feed them. And, it's just like it's the experience. It's all the experience.
Yes. So they're just regular full-size goats? They're not miniature goats?
We have the goats are pygmy goats.
Oh, pygmies. Okay, yeah.
Pygmy goats and dwarf Nigerian, which are smaller than pygmies. And then for my Christmas last year, my wife, Anita, bought me two fainting goats, Tennessee fainting goats. And those are the ones when you scare them, they sort of pass out.
Yes.
Go on YouTube, look down there. They're hilarious. But they're the best, they're the most, they're fun. People just, they just love petting goats and feeding them and letting them eat out of the hand. They just think that's great. People are just amazing.
Yeah.
We use them as to clear the land. That's what we bought them for.
Yeah. Oh, great. Mike, do you have any questions for Wayne here?
The only thing I missed was your dark chocolate red. What was that based on?
It's a Merlot-based.
Merlot-based,
and it's a special dark chocolate that we're able to, it's soluble. One of the problems is, if you put cocoa or something like that in it, it would just settle to the bottom. And, one that we had tested. It's milk chocolate that wines comes out of, I want to say, Holland. Cocoa something or other. And it's a milk chocolate. It reminds me of that when I was a kid, there was a drink called Yahoo or something like
it's
that.
It's still around. It's still around.
Is it still around?
Yeah.
Yahoo. This is, what we have is it's a dark chocolate. It's not in your face, but it's a subtle chocolate. And again, if you want a Merlot, go to Publix.
Yeah.
Philo, go to Kroger's, go to Green's, go to Harvard's, go to Total Wines. If you want a dark chocolate, go to Cityscape.
It's
the way we differentiate ourselves.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Would definitely be worth a trip up there. Okay. That was it. That's all I was looking at. And your opening, I guess we'll get into your location and everything, but you're open for as far as regular set hours throughout the rest of the year or throughout the year, or do you have special times you have to close or what?
Well, our business or retail hours are Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 to 6. So that's when we're open for standard dependable hours. We live on property.
Okay.
And so, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, we may or may not be here. That's when we do our, we have another business that we manage. So that's when we take care of the other business. That's when we run our errands. That's when we go pick up supplies. That's when we go out for dinner. That's when we, whatever. But Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, 10 to 6 is our standard business hours, retail hours.
While you're talking about it, go ahead and tell us all about the Cityscape Winery location, phone numbers, web address.
Okay.
Oh, you don't have Facebook. No Facebook. You need to get Facebook.
Well, we do have a Facebook page, but I got to say we are not good about maintaining. Our kids just say, you got to be on Facebook. And I say, well, I know it, but cityscapewinery.com is the website. It is an e-commerce. We also sell winemaking supplies to homemade winemakers. Again, you know, there's, like we said earlier, everybody's uncle or grandfather made wine when they were a kid. And there is quite a thriving community of homemade winemakers here. And as you may know, that you can make 100 gallons of wine or beer for personal consumption per year, or 200 per household. So there's a lot of people taking advantage of that. And we sell supplies.
I may interrupt here, Wayne, your corker. I noticed you have two corkers here. Are those pretty simple? How do they work?
The corkers are very simple. They're like a two handle, and you put on top of the bottle, and as you push down on each handle, it sort of grips the neck. And pushes the cork into the bottle. It squeezes it first, so it compresses it from a diameter point of view, and it pushes into the bottle, and then as you let it release it, it expands back out. One has to be adjustable, and one has to be fixed. It's the difference in the two, the price, whatever. But if you ever try to get a cork into a bottle, it's almost impossible unless you compress it.
Yeah, I'm looking at doing a supplemental corker, and I saw these, and I was really quite impressed. I may end up ordering one of these from you. Which other two do you recommend, the Italian or the Portuguese?
Well, the Italian is adjustable, so you can adjust the depth on it.
All right, so that's the better one then.
That's the only difference. I mean, if you're going to do a volume, you do a floor corker, which is much better.
I've got a
huge
four
volume
corker.
Pneumatic.
I've got a four corker, and I just look at it, like I say, a supplemental one. Just, you know, if I'm doing something small and short, and I don't want to mess with the four corker, then a little hand one like this, you know. So
that's, you know, for home use. That's what 95% of our people use. We have several customers that have four corkers because they do larger volumes, but. For the most part, the home guy just simply used the hand corker, and it does perfectly well for them.
Yeah. How tall is it?
Well, it's actually, you know, it's just sort of portable, fits in your hand. It's,
is it? Oh.
Yeah. Now, the floor corker, obviously, is about
4 feet.
You know, not quite four, maybe 3 feet up, 3 feet high, three feet, that, you know, triangle that balances it. But the hand corker, it just sort of is portable, and just set on top of the bottle, push it down, and there's cork in, move to the next one.
Sounds good. I may order one of those from you. All right. I'm okay. Sorry. I want to ask you that. So continue on telling us about the Cityscape and all of your information, please.
Well, we're located in Pelzer, South Carolina. It's the mailing address. It's Greenville County, upstate. The address is 589 Dufflin Bridge Road. As far as our telephone number, it's 864-329-0615. And the website is cityscapewinery, one word, .com, and it is an e-commerce site. And the email is cityscapewinery@aol.com.
And Mike just asked you the days you were open. You open year-round on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
We are. The times that we are, you know, we take vacation like everybody else and go visit grandkids. It's very important to us. On those occasions, we have other people who come in and manage the tasting room.
Oh, good. Okay.
So the Thursday, Friday, Saturdays are very dependable.
We're closed on Sundays for both because of the laws and because we like to have a day off. Sunday's a good day to port to us. And Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, we run our errands. We do our business. We make wine. We filter wine. We bottle wine. And we enjoy ourselves.
Very good.
All. We are retired.
Yeah, there you are. Yeah, you like to say you are anyway. You're not. You know that, don't you?
Well, you know, it's funny. As I was working corporate, I traveled, you know, internationally quite a bit, and I was on the road probably 2 weeks a month at least gone. But after I retired and we have two businesses. We have another business, a real estate investing company. We work harder now than I ever worked for my, 30 years in corporate America.
That's what I say. Also, you're really not retired, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But also I enjoy it more, too.
Yeah, well, then that's the key to it right there. That is the key, if anything.
That's important. You've got to enjoy what you do, and we do enjoy ourselves, and it's a lot of fun when you have people come in and, you sit and talk with them, and they want to know all the ins and outs of how you do this and why you do this and how you got started and all that. And, when they walk out, they have a good time. And, that's rewarding. That's worth a lot. So.
And it is, very much so. Well, Wayne, one more, a couple of things. One, how do you pronounce your last name?
Tammy.
Tammy, okay.
T-A-M-M-E. It's Austrian, yep.
Okay, that's what we were thinking. It was Tammy, but I wasn't sure. French.
Most people say tame.
Yeah. Tame, yeah. And Anita, if you're in the background, thank you for hooking us up tonight. And Wayne, thank you. It was very enjoyable, very informative, a lot of fun. And if we're ever up in South Carolina, I will definitely stop by and visit with you.
We'd love to have you come by and sip some more wine.
You know, I will do that. And you may be hearing from me. I may be ordering a corker from you. So.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Thanks a lot for being
on with us.
Thank you
very much. Nice. Good evening.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. All right. Very cool.
All right.
Very interesting. Supplies and everything. And, good location.
Yeah.
8 wineries in South Carolina.
8.
Wow.
That's it. That's it. 8.
Yeah.
And the things I was checking on, list like, I don't know, 14, 15, 18, some of them and all that. And, from what he's saying, it looks like the state government is just like battling them all the time. If you're going to open up a winery, move a little bit to the west and go to Georgia, move a little bit to the north and go to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Why hassle in South Carolina, Which is really too bad because, there's definitely
market. We have run into states like that, though, already, that don't recognize the potential that wineries bring to their state. So it's unfortunate, but.
All the time. All the time.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And it is unfortunate. I want to address something here. I was looking through the All About Wine 101 gmail.com for any of you who want to send me any information or just to say hi or whatever you want to do. I would love to get a note from you or anything. But I was looking through allaboutwine101@gmail.com. I was looking in the trash in the spam folder today.
I was going to say, where do you put your emails?
All of them, right? Email. The trash.
Email us, and I'll look in the trash can. And
looking at spam, and I saw this email that was thrown in there, and I didn't notice it until just now from J.C.D. Bruno. And we talked to him. This is Oak Summit Vineyard in Millbrook, New York. We talked to him 3 or 4 months ago. And he sent me a little quick note here. It says, I would like you to check out this property. And it was I clicked on it, and it went through Remax. And I looked at the property. But they showed a whole bunch of land and a whole bunch of property through that particular area there. So I don't know which one he was actually telling me about, because we always have a real estate section that our real estate thing we have on here. But there was a couple of pieces of land that were let's see, if find them here real fast. There was a couple of pieces of land that were located here on this site that I noticed, and they were nice. They were nice pieces of land with lakes on them and nice hills and all that in the Mill Pond area of Mill Brook area of New York. So I just wanted to say, if John Bruno from Millbrook, New York, Oak Summit Vineyard, if you're listening to me, if you pick up this program, email me again, and I guarantee you this one's not going to go into spam. Let me know which property you were talking about on this, or if it's sold, and, you know, sorry, but let me know. I'm curious. Yeah. Just like I said, I just discovered this today, and so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gmail does have a tendency to throw things. Mine's been pretty good, but I have missed a couple of them, and it's going through the spam folder, and I go, well, that's not spam.
Yeah, you know, and that's just what happened on this. Exactly what happened on this.
Yeah, it does happen. So, next week, we're
going to stay in South Carolina.
Okay.
I think we have another guest that I talked to, and they'll be able to join us next week. So I think we're going to stay in South Carolina. And maybe, I say a couple more weeks, but 2 weeks from tonight, I'm going to be gone out of town. But I'm hoping to have a remote program. And if I can all work it out, I'm going to try to have it at a winery up in Missouri. I'm going to be going up to Missouri and then up to Iowa for a few days and visiting with. We're having a cousin reunion. Hope all my cousins whom I have not seen in literally 40 years on some of them, 42 years.
Wow.
We're all going to get together in a couple of weeks and have a cousin reunion. So I'm excited about that. But we're going to, I'll be gone on the 27th, and I'm looking at doing a remote broadcast. So hopefully that'll happen. I'll keep everyone informed through the Facebook, which we need more people to sign up for that, and through emails and through posts and all that other stuff. So,
that's the 27th of September?
September, right. But next week, the 20th, we're still going to be in South Carolina.
All right. Sounds good. Wow, it's already the 20th. Oh, my gosh. It's
I know. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This month is flying by. This is one of those quick months.
Yeah, which we're getting into the holidays coming up, and you know, sometimes we take breaks during this time of year. So
keep in touch
with the schedule on Blog Talk Radio. There, you know, when you see the announcements and everything pop up there, also the Facebook page, facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. It's all one word and no spaces or dashes or anything. So go there, and you know, if you're on Facebook and you are listening, you are keeping tuned to the page for All About Wine, make sure you hit that like button. That kind of helps us out.
Yeah.
Let us know that you're kind of like subscribing to it or whatever, and keeping tabs on the show as well.
I have a sign at the winery on a glass behind the bar. It says like us on Facebook because they don't have a love button. So
same
thing with it.
Okay.
So like us. We know you love us, but they won't have a love button. So like us on Facebook.
Right, there you go. All right. Well, I guess we will see everybody next week on September 20th for South Carolina Part 2. And who knows, we may have a Part 3 somewhere around there, but we'll see what kind of, you know, people we can get in here and keep the show going on that. And
eight wine reviews in 8 weeks.
there you go. That would work.
That would work.
What was that? What was the last date we did? That just Pennsylvania or something?
Pennsylvania.
Getting. Oh man, that ran for. Yeah, we could have done a long time on that one. Well, we did.
Which is cool. We learned a lot of stuff. Yeah,
absolutely.
It was
great talking to a variety. A variety of people there. It's great getting different opinions and different people on here. It's really great to listen to. So
yeah,
very cool. All right, we'll see you all next time. Yeah,
and if you out there too are you know in the wine business and want to join us, you're more than welcome to. Just get in touch with us on Facebook or on Gmail, or anybody who has a suggestion for topics, get in touch with us.
Yeah, and it doesn't have if you're not associated with South Carolina or the next state, which would be I have no idea. But
I have
one.
Where's
my list of states?
South Dakota, maybe. Yeah,
so it could be. If you're, it doesn't have to be the next state in line because we are covering the United States in alphabetical order. But if it's just some other wine related topic or what you want to represent as far as the wine industry, get in touch with the show and we'll make exceptions. Like last week, we took a break, I think, and we went with some miscellaneous topics. So. We can do that. So we're open to that as well.
Just a couple of weeks before that, we went to Missouri. Had a guy I visited in Missouri, and we brought him on. So
So it can mix around. It doesn't have to be in order. So I guess we will end the show for tonight at 8 something this evening, 8:16 or so. Or if you're over at Ron's place, it's like 7 whatever it is, 45.
42.
42.
Yeah. Whatever.
I know. We compare our clocks before the show starts, and what does yours say? Oh, I'm running way behind.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's that time zone thing. You're closer to the Gulf of Mexico than I am, so the time is a little different there.
Yeah, it's, you got that difference. Although not a whole hour, so we just do fractions,
Yes, fractions of an hour. So we'll be back 7 p.m. Eastern time next Thursday on September 20th. And thank you all for listening. And here comes the ending of the show theme, I guess. And everybody get stand up and start dancing.
We're out of here. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Ready? Okay, here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Okay, go. All right.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.